Chapter 7 The Secret Valley. One morning, some time later, I received a strange letter by post asking me to come to a certain address in Tucson, Arizona. It conveyed the idea that the information to be given was of such a nature as could only be explained in person. I considered the extraordinary way in which the request had reached me, and yet felt an inner desire to respond to the call. In a few days I went to the address given, rang the bell, and in a moment the door was opened by a tall, slender gentleman, about 40 years of age, with iron-gray hair and gray eyes, who stood perhaps 6 feet 1 inch in height. I introduced myself, and he greeted me with a cordial, sincere handshake, which revealed unmistakably that his was an absolutely true and dependable nature. His eyes were steady and fearless, and he gave one the impression that he possessed great reserve energy. I felt an unusual inner harmony about him, and knew it could only mean the starting of a deep and wonderful friendship. He too seemed aware of an inner something that made each of us feel attracted to the other. He asked me to come in and be seated. "You are here," he began, "at my request, and I am deeply grateful, strange as it must have seemed to you. Your address was given me by one of whom I shall speak later. In explanation, I have this to say, that I have made some very remarkable discoveries, which I must ask you to accept on faith until I can take you with me and prove their truth and reality to you. I was advised to get directly in touch with you personally, as the only one to whom this should be revealed, and with which I am concerned. For a starting point, I shall have to begin with things that occurred 20 years ago. At that time, I had a beautiful wife. Now I know she had great inner growth, of which, however, I was not aware. A son was born, whom we both idolized. For 5 years our happiness was complete. Suddenly, without any warning or apparent reason, the child disappeared. For many weeks we searched and searched, and did everything humanly possible to find him, but to no avail. Finally we gave up all hope. His mother never recovered from the shock, and 5 months later passed on. She had made a strange request during the last few days of her life, that her body be held in the vault for 7 days after her passing, and then be cremated. It seemed rather peculiar to me, for at no time had we ever discussed anything in regard to this subject. However, I complied with her wishes. Imagine my surprise 5 days after her funeral, when I received a call from the man in charge of the cemetery saying he had found the vault opened that morning and the body gone. No clue to anything concerning the whole strange occurrence was ever discovered. 16 years later, I awakened one morning to find a letter upon the floor of my room addressed to me but with no postmark. I picked it up, opened it, read the contents, which left me mystified and incredulous. It read, "Your wife and son are living, well and strong. Soon you will see them. Have patience until that time. Rejoice to know there is no death. At the appointed time, directions will reach you in this manner which you are to follow implicitly. All depends upon your absolute silence. You shall see and receive full explanation of all that has seemed so mysterious. Then you will understand why truth is far stranger and more wonderful than fiction. For even the most extraordinary fiction is but the record of a truth that is somewhere in the universe. Signed, a friend." My friend, you can imagine my astonishment. At first I did not believe a word of it. The third evening after this I was sitting in front of my great fire when I heard my beloved wife's voice as clear and distinct as if she were in the room beside me, saying, "Robert, my beloved, I am alive and well, and our son is with me. We will be so happy when you are with us again." Do not distrust the message. It is all true. You will be brought to us if you do not allow doubt to shut the door. I speak to you through the sound ray, which you will one day learn to use. I could stand the tension no longer and said, "Show yourself to me and I will believe." Instantly the voice replied, "Wait a moment." In about 3 minutes, a brilliant ray of golden light came into the room, forming a tunnel, at the other end of which stood my beautiful wife. It was she, unmistakably. "Beloved," she said, "seeming miracles have taken place in the midst of your life for years. But because your attention has not been called in the right direction, we had to wait until this time. Trust the message that will come to you. Then you will come to us, and I assure you, a new world will open. To our great love there is no barrier." Instantly the light ray vanished, and with it the voice. My joy knew no bounds. I could no longer doubt. I felt a relaxation, peace, and rest I had not known for years. Then came weeks of waiting, which I now know was a preparation going on within me. At last, the message I longed for so much came, and with it a diagram and directions to be followed. I saw this would lead me into the high mountains southeast of Tucson, Arizona. I made preparation to go at once, saying to my friends I was going to do a little prospecting. I took a horse and pack animal, finding very little discomfort and no difficulty in following the directions given. If I could have gone as the crow flies, I would easily have covered the distance in 2 days. Just before sundown of the third day, I came to a blind canyon, and would have passed it unnoticed if it had not been for the diagram. I had just made camp when it became dark. I rolled up in my blankets and soon dropped off to sleep, dreaming most vividly of waking in the morning and seeing a young man standing nearby looking at me. When I did awaken, to my astonishment, there stood the young man in real life, looking at me intently. He greeted me with a beautiful smile, saying, "My friend, you are expected to follow me." I noticed he had my things in readiness, and turning without further discussion led the way toward the head of the canyon. After about an hour, we came to a stop because of a cliff that seemed to close the way before us. He turned, placed his hands upon the rock, and pressed against it. A section of the wall, perhaps 10 by 12 feet, moved into a depth of about 1 foot and then slid to one side. We entered a tunnel that centuries ago must have been the bed of an underground watercourse. My companion closed the entrance behind us, and as we turned to go forward, a soft radiance spread everywhere, so we could see quite clearly. I was astonished at all I saw, but I remembered the admonition I had received in my instruction to be silent. We continued in the tunnel for more than an hour, and finally came to a massive metal door. This opened slowly at my companion's touch. He stood aside and waited for me to pass through. I stepped out into the bright sunlight, almost breathless with delight at the beauty of the scene before me. Ahead of us lay a valley of surpassing loveliness, about 100 acres in extent. "My friend," said the young man, "you have returned home after a long absence, all of which you will soon understand." He then led the way to a beautiful building near the foot of a sheer cliff at the upper end of the valley. As we came nearer, I could see many kinds of fruit and vegetables growing in abundance, among them oranges, dates, English walnuts, and pecans. A beautiful waterfall poured over the cliff, making a limpid pool at its base. The building was a massive one, and looked as though it had stood there for centuries. We had almost reached it when a beautiful woman in white appeared at the entrance. We came nearer, and my beloved wife stood before us, more beautiful than ever. In another instant I held her in my arms, and after all the agony I had been through in those years, it was almost more than I could stand. She turned, putting her arm around the young man who had brought me, and said, "Robert, this is our son." "Son," was all I could say. So nearly was I overcome by my emotions. He stepped forward, put his arms around both of us, and we three stood there for a moment in deepest love and gratitude, happy once more. I suddenly realized it was 16 years since he had disappeared, and by now he must be 21. He answered my thought by saying, "Yes, Father, I am 21. Tomorrow is my birthday." "How can you read my thoughts so readily?" I asked. "Oh, that is a very ordinary and easy thing for us. It is all quite natural when you understand how to do it, and really, quite simple," he replied. "Come," he continued, "you must be hungry. Let us have something to eat." With their arms around me, we entered the ancient building. The interior was finished in pink marble and white onyx. I was shown to a beautiful room, where the morning sun flooded everything with its glorious radiance. I refreshed myself, and found a suit of white flannel had been provided for me. I tried it on, and it fitted perfectly. This surprised me, but again I remembered the admonition to be silent. I went downstairs and was presented to a striking-looking gentleman about my own height, with large, dark, piercing eyes. "Father," said my son, "this is our beloved master, Ariel. He is the one who saved the lives of both mother and me, and has trained us all these years until you could be prepared to join us here. It was he who sent you the message and directions to come, because the time had arrived for your definite training to begin." We entered the dining room, which was magnificent, and I could not refrain from expressing my admiration. It had been placed at the southeast corner of the building on the main floor, and was flooded with sunshine morning and afternoon. The walls were made of heavily carved walnut, and the beamed ceiling inlaid between the beams with motifs in hexagonal design. A solid piece of walnut, at least 2 inches thick, rested on an ornately carved pedestal, served as a table, and looked as if it were thousands of years old. We took our places around it, and presently a slender youth entered. My son introduced him by saying, "This is our brother Fun Wei, whom our master brought from China when he was an infant at a time when his life was about to be taken. He is from a very ancient Chinese family and is able to do many wonderful things. He has always wished to serve us, and we are privileged and happy to call him brother. He is one of the most joyous natures I have ever known." Among the things for breakfast were luscious strawberries with delicious date and nut cakes. We went into the large living room, and the master Ariel said to me, "At the time your beloved wife, who is your twin Ray, would have passed on, I saw an opportunity to give certain assistance which would enable her to reach the ascended state, and thus have much greater freedom and wider capacity for service. It was my great privilege and joy to give that assistance. I opened the casket, restored her to conscious action, and enabled her to raise the body. It had already reached a point of high attenuation, because her desire for the light was very great. It was her intense adoration to, and longing for the light, that made possible her ascension. I explained this to her the day you thought she had passed on. All three of you were children of mine in an embodiment of long ago. A great love was generated then which has lasted through the centuries. Her deep love made possible the assistance and raising that has been accomplished at this time. Your son, who was stolen with the intention of being held for ransom, was brought to this canyon. The two, concerned with his kidnapping, began to quarrel, and one planned to take the child's life. I appeared before them and took him. They were paralyzed by their own fear, and neither ever recovered. Both passed on a few weeks later. If one deliberately takes the life of another human being, or determines mentally to take it, he has set a cause into motion that will surely take his own. A feeling or desire for the death of another person will do the same thing, for it goes forth to the person, then begins its return journey to the one who sent it out. Many times, individuals allow resentment against injustice to flash forth with an intense feeling to rid the world of a certain individual. This is a subtle form of the thought of death, and to the one who sends it out, it must return. Many, many people bring about their own dissolution by this very subtle activity of the human self, for no one ever escapes this immutable law. There are many phases of its reaction, and it is because humanity indulges in such thoughts and feelings that the race as a whole has been experiencing the dissolution of body after body. The number of mankind that pass out through physical violence is infinitesimal compared to the deaths brought about by these subtle activities of thought, feeling, and the spoken word. The human race has been killing itself off for thousands of years in this subtle way because it will not learn the law of life and obey it. There is only one law of life, and that is love. The self-conscious thinking individual who will not or does not obey that eternal beneficent decree cannot and will not retain the physical body because all that is not love dissolves form, and it matters not whether it be thought, word, feeling, or deed, intentional or unintentional. The law acts regardless. Thoughts, feelings, words, and deeds are each but so much force acting, and eternally move in an orbit of their own. If man knew that he never ceases creating, even for an instant, he would realize through the presence of God within himself, he could purify his miscreations and thus be free from his own limitations. He spins a cocoon of human discord around himself and goes to sleep within it, forgetting, at least for a time, that if he can build it, he can also break through. By using the wings of his soul, adoration and determination, he can break through his self-created darkness. Then he lives once more at the center of his being, in the light and freedom of his God self. However, in the activity of you and your beloved family, or shall I say my beloved family, the cloud that has seemed to hold so much of sorrow is now turned inside out and reveals its glorious golden lining. You have now come within the radiant splendor of the light from which you will never again recede. In most cases, if human beings knew the wonderful things that are sometimes planned for them, they would unknowingly prevent the approach of this greater good. You have been invited here not only to join your loved ones, but to receive definite instruction concerning the existence, use, and direction of the mighty God power latent within you. When you understand how to release and control it, anything will be possible for you. Your loved ones use the light and sound rays in communicating with you. This knowledge, with its power, will be explained, and you too shall be enabled to operate them consciously and at will. You feel deeply, and when that characteristic is consciously governed, there will come an awareness of the mighty God power that stands ready to be released at any instant. You are to remain here for 6 weeks of training, and then return to the outer world to use the understanding you have received. Come again at any time, for you are now one of us. I can never put into words what those 6 weeks meant to me. To become aware of my own ability to use the instruction and application of such wisdom astonished me. Soon I began to gain a confidence in myself that made everything much easier. What seems so mysterious and unusual to the human, I found natural and normal to this stupendous inner presence. I had to realize that I was truly the Son of God. As the Son of the source of all good, the limitless wisdom energy obeyed my conscious direction, and when I directed it, as does a master, produced results instantly. As I gained confidence in my own ability to use the great law, the fulfillment naturally became more and more rapid. I marvel yet at the ever-pouring fountain of love and wisdom that streamed forth from this great master. We love him with a deep devotion, greater than any love that could ever exist between parent and child, for the love tie formed by the giving of spiritual understanding is eternal and far deeper than any love generated through human experience, no matter how beautiful and strong it may be. He often said to us, "If you will make yourselves an eternal fountain of divine love, pouring it forth into every place your thought goes, you will become such a magnet for all good that you will have to call for help to dispense it. Peace and calmness of soul release a power which compels obedience of the outer mind. This must be claimed with authority. Our home here in this secret valley has been used for over 4,000 years. One day, after giving a remarkable discourse on God's ownership, he looked at me very intently and suggested we take a walk. He led the way to the opposite side of the valley from which we had entered. Near the south wall, and running parallel with it from east to west, was a ridge beginning at the ground, rising to about 7 feet in height, extending about 2,000 feet in length, and then descending to the ground again. As we came closer, I saw it was a vein of white quartz. The Master Ariel stepped to where the vein came to the ground and kicked a piece loose with his foot. I saw it was immensely rich in gold. My human love for gold attempted to surge forth, but the inner presence instantly checked it, and with a smile the Master remarked, "That is well done. Now I have work to do in Europe, and must leave you for the present." He smiled, and was gone instantly. It was the first time he had shown the full dominion he possessed, and the things he was able to do in this manner. Immediately my son became visible in exactly the same spot where Ariel had been standing the instant before, and laughed heartily at my surprise. "Mother and I," he said, "can take our bodies with us wherever we choose in the same way. Do not be surprised. It is a natural law, and only seems strange and unusual because you are not using it as yet. It really is no more extraordinary than the telephone would have been to the people of the Middle Ages. If they had known the law of its construction, they could have used it then, just as well as we of this century." Since that visit to my family in the secret valley, I have been there 7 times. The last time I returned to the outer world, the Master gave me your address, which accounts for my asking you to come here. He extends the invitation for you to return with me. My host suddenly realized he had been talking several hours, and begged indulgence for taxing my patience. I told him the experiences were so fascinating, and I had been so intensely interested that time was non-existent so far as I was concerned. I accepted, and was deeply grateful for the Master Ariel's invitation to visit them, and said so frankly. A moment later a tall young man came into the room. "Let me present our brother, Fun Wei," said my host, introducing him, and in the most perfect English he replied, "My brother, with the heart of light, has journeyed far. My heart leaps in ecstasy and joy. My soul feels your serenity and radiance. Addressing my host directly, he continued, Knowing you are busy, I am here to serve you. It will give us great pleasure to have you break bread with us, said my friend, turning to me. And together we passed into the dining room. Our dinner was delicious, and when finished, my host again resumed his conversation, relating many of his personal experiences with Ariel. They were remarkable indeed. That is, speaking from the human side of our consciousness only, but from the standpoint of our divinity, all was and is supremely natural. Suddenly, a ray of light, or rather a tube of light, came into the room. And from the conversation, I knew it was my host's twin ray speaking. In a moment, the ray was directed to me, and he said, Beloved, allow me to present the brother whom our master Ariel has requested I meet. I saw his twin ray and heard her as clearly as if she stood in the room beside us. This way of communicating is a wonderfully happy experience, and it is possible to so condense light as to form a tube in which sound and vision can be conveyed. It was as real as a searchlight. My host insisted that I make his home mine until the day of our departure into the mountains. We started before daylight the seventh day after our meeting, and it was one of the most memorable experiences of my life up to that time. All he had told me proved to be true in the minutest detail. Our arrival at the Secret Valley was a most joyous event, and our happiness was very great. I met my host, Twin Ray, and their son, and then was shown over the ancient building where so many students had received the true understanding of the laws of being and attained their eternal freedom. It was a marvelous sensation to stand where the great God power had been focused for so many centuries, and the ascended masters had made a retreat for some of their work. I sat contemplating the blessings the students had received who were privileged to come there, when the master Ariel addressed me. My son, he began, you are nearing a wonderful liberation. Hold close to the continuous acceptance of your own indwelling master presence, and you will have just cause for great rejoicing. He extended his right hand, and the veil between the visible and invisible was drawn aside. I want you to see, he continued, as we who are ascended, the sublime and majestic activity of our world. Here we continually bear witness as sons of God, because there is no longer doubt, fear, or imperfection within us. I shall always remember the joy and privilege that was mine during the days I spent with those wonderful people. Every day, said Ariel, you shall witness the use of the light and sound rays that annihilate time and space, and which mankind is destined to use in the near future, as naturally as it now uses the telephone. This is one of the most stupendous activities the individual may learn how to direct. A light ray can be drawn and controlled, so it may be used as a pencil to write upon metal or in the sky, and the writing remain visible as long as the one directing it desires. When the student is strong enough to stand against the opinions of the world of ignorance, then he or she is ready to bear witness to the marvels of the individual activities of God manifested by the ascended masters. Until he can do this, the power and suggestion and the radiation of doubt from others will disturb him intermittently to such an extent that he many times gives up the quest for truth. Interruption to the steady flow of instruction is discord. Discord is the wedge and subtle way by which the sinister force on the earth enters the outer activity of a student who has determined to face the light. Such activity is very subtle, because it is a feeling, and creeps in upon one before he is really aware of its existence. It is persistent beyond belief, and the growth is so insidious that one does not realize what has been done until the momentum is already underway. This feeling begins as a slight doubt. A doubt need only be felt 2 or 3 times until it becomes distrust. Distrust whirls a time or two in the emotional body and becomes suspicion. And suspicion is self-destruction. Remember this, my son. As you return again to the outer world, and you will find it a safeguard that will carry you through every experience in life, keeping you untouched by discord. If one sends out suspicion, he will be suspected, for everyone has in his world just exactly that which he puts into it, and this eternal, irrevocable decree exists throughout the universe. All impulses of consciousness travel back to the central point that sent them out. Not even an atom escapes. The real student of light faces the light, sends it before him, sees its enfolding radiance everywhere he moves, and adores it constantly. From the doubt, fear, suspicion, and ignorance of the human mind, he turns away and knows only the light. This is his source, his true self. With these parting words, Ariel bade me farewell, and I returned to the daily routine of my outer life.